All right. Well, I will ask you to please help me to welcome a very special man to our stage today. Please welcome Mike. There's a mic in front of you.
Oh, there's me in front of me?
Yeah.
My name's Mike. I'm an alcoholic. It's a privilege to get up here, and it's a privilege to ask to speak at a meeting. I've always wanted to do this. When I first came in, I wanted to be a circus speaker. Well, ain't gonna happen. And I'd like to start off with, I do a little bit of the other 12-step program, but I've learned late in this program that, because I am an Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm going to try to keep it as Alcoholics Anonymous because of the people that put this book together out of respect. It ain't nothing about anything else. And I'm just letting you guys know it. If I happen to say something, please don't start throwing rocks at me or booing me, but that's still a part of my story. And when I go to the other 12-step program, I tell them the same thing. And it is a part of my story. It's not my fault that I became dual addicted, because when I came in here, I came in here for one thing. Before I came in here, I wanted one thing to do, and I said, I'd take anything that would alter my mind. I don't care what it was. At one point, before I started drinking, I was smaller. I had a small Swin bike. I'm sure those people about as old as I am. It was red and white, and you get it at this store, and it sat in my yard for a long time because we couldn't afford to buy tubes for it, and the front tire had air in it, and I was messing around, and this little kid, a friend of mine that we used to hang around together, he said, why don't you suck the air out of that front tire tube? And of course, I'm a follower, so I did it, and I got my little buzz. And that started my introduction to doing things that I've never done before. I am not going to tell you that I started at the age of 13. My sponsor that I have today says, hey, everybody talked about what, 13? What, I'm between 8 and 9. And most people don't drink about that time, but my mother come from the old country, she come from Mexico, and back in the days, if you had a toothache, they'd rub whiskey on you, and my mother was a low-income mother, so she used to rub wine on my gums. So actually, that's where I started drinking alcohol. I didn't know it at the time. It didn't get me as crazy, but I like the way it tastes. You know, I come from a family that we don't hug. We don't know what hug is. We don't tell each other we love you. I come from a family that we're not that close. And we don't do things like normal families do. My mother was an alcoholic. And she used to do the other kind of stuff. And I was brought up that way. There was 11 of us, and I was the youngest one out of 11 of us, and I'm the last of the Mohegan. I was a oops baby. I wasn't supposed to be born, and I guess my dad went out a good time, and that's how I ended up in the earth. Yeah, I had no control of that. I had no idea. It's my dad was a drunk. We used to live in Armona, and he was a dairyman, and none of us boys took that trade. We didn't become what you call dairymen. We became drunks, okay? And my dad had a dog with him 24/7 in the dairy, and when he went to the bars, he used to go to the bars there in Armona. There used to be a bar there where there's a bar there now in the service station. He used to get drunk and nobody can touch him, get near him. So they let him sleep overnight and close the door. And in the morning, he would get up and go to work. Well, one morning he got up, him and his dog got up, and he was right there by the cemetery in Armona, and this phone company, there were green vans at the time, come by and crossed the center lane and pinned him against the fence and killed him. So there's my mother with, by that time there was 10 of us, the oldest one left, and there was 10 of us there, and she come from Mexico, and a good system we had back in the days, they came up to my mother, these people that worked at these welfare departments at the time, offered her some money if she wouldn't press no charges. And being my mother not wanting to be deported, she accepted it. So there I became a welfare child, you know. We had nothing. Our dad died and we didn't, she had no money built up and we didn't know where we were going to live, and that's the way I was brought up, and it was doggy for each other, you know. And my brothers would always pick on me because I was the youngest, you know, and many days I fought with my oldest brothers. You know, we shared the same socks, the same shoes, you know, and I never had anything on my own. And I was already used to it by the time I started going to school. I used to go to school, and I didn't have no shoes, so I used to go to barefooted. And one day I met a teacher out of Fresno there in Hanford that asked me, how come you're not wearing shoes, Mike? I said, well, I don't like them. They're too hot for my feet, and my feet stink. So I think she ate that for a little bit, not too much. Anyway, she called the welfare department. The welfare department went down where we lived at, right down the south side of Hanford, knocked on the door. My mother came out, and my mother got her butt chewed out because she was sending me to school without no shoes. So that made all my brothers and sisters gang up on me because then I became a snitch. Okay, that's the way I was brought up. It wasn't, you know, I spoke out of term. No, they came out and said, you're a damn snitch. You know, so, and that went on for a long time. And anyway, throughout the years, I got a little bit better. I went to Lincoln School. I always got in trouble at Lincoln School. They'd always kick me after school. I'd run away from school because I always thought, you know, I'm going to be what I call those people is a low-income people. I'm never going to get a job like most of you got a job. You go to college. Why in the hell do I need to read? I don't need all this stuff. All I'm going to be is picking cotton all my life. So I didn't look for the future because I had no future. And basically what it was, and that's how it was for me. And so I wasn't there for the education. I was there because the law says if you don't go to school, we're not going to give you any welfare. So that's the reason I went. I did no desire to learn. Didn't want to learn. And I was brought up that way. And I'd always seen my brothers fight with their wives, you know, and I thought that, well, doesn't all Mexicans do that? You know, and that's what I did when I got married. You know, I didn't know what love was. I share this all the time. It's not to, it's to remind me of where I come from. And my mother was an alcoholic. There was a Victory Theater there on 7th Street in Hanford that is closed down. They might condemn, the bill has already been condemned. There was a bar right next to that theater. She'd come out of there, she'd go to the Rice Bowl in Hanford. The Chinese place is the only Chinese place I know. She'd walk in there and she'd get, what I know about that is, she'd get the deep fried chicken. And they make some deep fried chicken. And she'd walk home. My mother wasn't an average mother that would walk through the light so she wouldn't get jumped on. She'd walk through the alleys. And when she'd come home, she wouldn't come around the front door. She'd come out the back door. And she walked in, and I'm there. You know, by that time, I'm already in junior high and high in junior high, Woodrow Wilson, and one occasion she would wake me up, and I'd be asleep in the bed, and she'd wake me up, and by that time, all my brothers left except for my oldest brother, older than my sister, there were the only three of us left, and she'd walk in there, and she'd move my shoulder, and I'd wake up. And she says, in Spanish, she said, "Here, amigo, I brought you something." And in English, she says, "Here, son, I brought you something." And of course, I didn't eat that night because she was out, you know, doing what mothers do if they drink. I don't know, you know, do the same thing I did. But anyway, and I started eating this chicken. Halfway through the chicken, this lady, my mother, would reach over and hug me. And she say in Spanish, "Te quiero, amigo," and then in English is, "I love you, son." And that went on for years and years and years. And my mother was the type of person. I come from a family, you can have an elephant in front of your room, in the middle of your room, you go over it, under it, and around it, but you never go through it. That was my mother. We never talked about the night before. It was a sin to talk about it. And I was brought up that way. Not to share, not to talk, not to have any kinds of feelings. You know, and that's how I was brought up. I made it through high school. And when I was in high school, I had two PE classes because I didn't know how to read. So state says you got to go to school. So they did. They put me what we used to call the MR group. No offense to anybody today, but we used to call the mentally retarded. We all hang out together and fight in school. There was about 15 of us, you know, so they call us the MRs. And they gave me two PEs and two lunch hours. So basically, I had just a morning class that I would never go in, and then an evening class, and then they sent me home. So I never learned anything. I didn't care. I wasn't gonna be anything. What people would say, going to college or getting a job at the office. Yeah, that ain't for this Mexican, you know. And that's the way I was brought up. We lived in the South Side, and my home. And the side side was between what we called back then the barrio, your turf or whatever. I was a wannabe, okay? Never made it, but I was a wannabe wang banger. And my playground was Lacey Park. My area I just ran away was between 10th and 11th Avenue and 7th and Houston. There in Hanford, never got out of there. I didn't know that Hanford had an airport. Never knew that. It was not like Fresno or Brasilia. A little dinky airport. I think just enough room for the flights to go in there. You know? And I didn't know that till I got arrested. Now, I was brought up by the state of California. I've been in juvenile halls. I've been in prison. And that's how it was. And my mother said, it wasn't like usually kids are these days. You send to your wife or your mother and oh, send me a package of stuff. My mother would tell me, "You get your ass into it, you get your ass out of it." She never wrote a letter to me when I was in prison or nothing like that. And the reason I went to prison is because I used to fight when I drink. I used to get crazy. You know, if I fought with my brother, he kicked me out. I came back and fought with him again, and I didn't go back. So basically, I lived on the streets for a while and drinking. And at that time, I was drinking cocaine, white port, and port, wine. Yeah, I wasn't drinking no beer. I wasn't educated yet to drink beer. You know, and I had a brother that every time I drank something, he twisted my arm. And I think that's why this arm like it. He twisted my arm. He said, "You're going to drink this." So I said, "Okay." I watched him. He was going to twist it and break it. And I didn't know at the time. I blame my brother for where I was at that time. And anyway, so what happened is that I started drinking wine. I hang out at the parks. And I did that all my life through high school. And then I met this girl that I was madly in love with. She was my first wife. Madly in love with this woman. You know, and we got together. At that time, my mother was still alive. I was 16. She was 15. I asked my mother if she would sign for us. She said no. So a good alcoholic I am, I ran to Grandma. And Grandma's going to save me. I ran to Grandma, and Grandma said, yes, he signed for us. And, you know, and that's how I got to be with my first wife. My son, my first son, he was born in 62, I believe. And I got married in 60. We left Hanford because I was getting too much in trouble. It was all the friends and my homeboys and homegirls that I got in a fight with. Ended up going to Hollister, a little town up by Salinas. I got a job in Hollister, and I got a job working on a tractor. They showed me how to work a tractor, rake the hay and stuff. And on my birthday, I took a thermos full of beer, and I cleared beside me. And at lunch, I'm waiting for lunch, man. I'm gonna pull over and down this good old beer, right? So at lunch come around, I get my burrito that my wife did, and I went to go open up the thermos, and the sucker blew up. No one told me you couldn't take beer and shake it all day. So that's what I did. It didn't work out for me over there, so I came back, and by that time I started getting in trouble, going into jails and stuff. I kept doing that for a long time, and I finally got I made the big top. I went to college. I went to Vacaville. Getting back to there, I didn't know it was an airport. When they sentenced me, to 15 years to life, and for burglary. And I said, "God, what did you kill a mayor?" They would set an example for me. The people in Hanford, California didn't want me to go back. They wanted to set an example for me because I would always get into trouble. Anyway, out of jail, we got to the airport, which I didn't know. They put them yellow suits, orange suits on me, and put chains on my legs, chains around my waist, and chains and braces like this. And they hopped me into this airplane. I heard about airplanes, but I didn't know what the hell they did. Come on, I'm from the South Side. We don't see stuff like that in movies. So anyway, we leave there, and we're going over. We stopped in the prison. We've got another guy, and we're going into Vacaville, almost to Vacaville. I asked the pilot, I said, what would happen if this plane started going down? He says, I don't know, but the state gave me a parachute. In other words, you're on your own, brother. He made a circle and said, this is going to be your home for the next 15 years. And I thought I was a tough one coming out of Southside. I got down there. They opened the big gate. For some of us know that's been there. The big gate slides open. And as they walk you through, that's before they made the little doors, as they walk you through that gate, you hear a big old and that's one sound I'll never forget. And I walked in there, and I didn't want to mess up, because they told me a long time ago, but one of my brothers told me, you know, they like young kids going into prisons, and watch how you walk. So I said, man, mother started walking like this. And I made sure I wasn't going to mess up when I went to prison. There was a guard there, and he says, you know what, Mike, he says, you're no longer Mr. Mike Sumaya. He says, your name is 85865 till the day you get out of here or till the day you die. And that's one number I'll never forget. That was my name, 85865. So I didn't want to mess up. And in the process of getting me in there, they took off my clothes. Now I'm a macho man, come from the South Side. Oh yeah, I've got to be looking good at all costs. You know? Someone said, don't take a shower and oops, your soap, and I didn't. You know, I always stood behind the wall there. Anyway, he said, come with me, and I'm going to show you where the showers are at. So I walked behind him, and I heard him say, boo. I didn't know what he said, too damn scared. We walk out, And if some of you have been in prison, they got a hallway. They call the mainland. You got secretaries, you got judges, you got everybody run that hallway. Well, this man opened the door, and I'm still behind him. And I hear this, in prison. I'm looking around, I thought, what the, you know? And they keep whistling and keep saying, look at that, he sure is good, you know? And I say, oh shit, the dog ain't talking about me. The guard turns around and he sees me, he has a heart attack. He says, you dumb, da-dun, da-dun, get yourself back in the shower. So I didn't say nothing. I did what I showed. They gave me my clothes and they shot me to the first tier because newcomers in prison, they want to see if you're going to commit suicide, if you can handle it. And they put me in the first tier. They left me there for about 3 weeks. Then they shot me, they took me down and put me in a second tier. And I was able to go out to the yard. And I went to the yard. And all those guys that I didn't see in handprints, I thought they died on me. And all my homeboys are in prison. They say, hey, homeboy, orale, carnal, orale, simón, you know? And I learned how to play handball. You know, I'm good college I went to. But what I forgot to tell you is that when I went to the yard, a couple of my homeboys started talking. He says, yeah. He says, hey, Mike, did you see that fine little dude that walked in about three weeks ago? I said, no. Yeah, he was a Mexican. He walked through the hall, plumbing, naked. And I said, no. No. I wish I would have seen that. And that's where I learned I ain't coming to nothing. Anyway, I did my time. I came into Hanford and I started drinking more and more and more and more and more and more and more. My same brother taught me how to drink wine. He taught me how to drink beer. And I blame him for it. And the same brother that taught me how to drink beer, he introduced me to funny pills. And I did that, and by that time in my life, I was doing everything. If you give me something, and if it didn't hit me 3 seconds, it was no good. I don't want no part of it. It's nasty. And I ended up being an alcoholic and an addict. And that started my journey of denial and stuff. And I'll never forget that. It's that when I started doing that, I got getting the worst. My wife left me when I was in prison. Gave me a Dear John letter, you know, and I started messing around and got in and out of trouble in prison. I started drinking. I got so drunk one day, I'm coming out of the bars and in Hanford, they got a high building, and I seen a cop coming and had a beer. You could take him out of the bars, the glasses. So I had my good arm then. So what I did, I seen him come, and I went like this, through the sucker, all the way, hoping it would go over on top of the roof, right? Well, it didn't make it. That hit the curb, and came right down on my head, and I'm bleeding like hell. And I ran to my girlfriend's house, and I said, and she opened it, what happened? Oh, you think I'm a guy? I see the guy just kicked right now, man. Lope. Still in denial. I ain't gonna, that's all about looking good. You know, and anyway, what happened, I got to a point where I left Hanford. I hooked up with my second wife, and we weren't in the program when we first got there, and we had our ups and downs. I started drinking. The cops in Hollister kept seeing me every time I walked down Main Street, and I turned my head like this, because that way they would know who the hell I am. They knew I was Samaya, because a lot of us lived there then, and that way they'll never stop me, right? Well, one day I kept walking through there, and this cop pulled me over, and he says, are you a Samaya? And I says, yeah, why? Smart as that. Why? What'd they tell you? He says, well, you know, I'm going to have to arrest you, Mr. Samaya. I says, why? He says, you got driver license. I said, no, that's the reason I'm not driving. I like to drink. I ain't bothering nobody. And he looked at me and he says, well, that's not the problem, Mike. the problem is you know these posts on the side where it says no parking, 5 minutes zone, and whatever? They keep popping in your way. I had dents in my head all over the place. See, I'm going to take you for your protection. I said, oh, man. So that started there, and they started harassing me there, and I kept drinking. I left my other wife, and I met up with this other girl, and I'm the type of person when I was out there drinking that I always had a backup. If you had a six-pack, I had a six-pack at home, so when yours run out, I can go home and drink mine. That's called a backup. Well, I came in this program, the same thing with women. I had a backup. This girl I was messing with, she was out of Gilroy, and I could never figure out, why can I ever drink this woman out of the table? Well, I come to find out later, she was dropping those, what they call those little funny pills that come in the jar. They used to call them whites. She was dropping them, so there's no way in the world I could stay up with her. And that's where I met my wife today. We lived together, and we couldn't make it together, so I left. But every time this one taught me wrong, I'd run to her house, right around the corner from all the bars. I knock on the door, and I said, Barbara. And she said, what? I said, let me in. She said, no. I said, but she already started going to AA meetings, right? That's all those people who got you all brainwashed. Yeah. So, but that didn't stop me. I left, and one day I knocked on her door, and she had this guy that she knew was in living with her, and I said, I thought I was going to try to kick his butt. He had a car parked in the driveway where I used to have been parked at, and I got a rock and I started breaking all his glasses and stuff around his car, and I didn't get picked up. I don't know why, but I didn't. But I kept drinking. I used to love to drink blackberry brandy, Southern Comfort, all sweet stuff. Oh, I love sweet stuff. I love to drink all that good stuff. And I drank it, and by that time, Barbara was going to meetings, and this girl would dump me, and I'd run to Barbara, and I had to go to those classes they got over there in Hollister. You know, and I'd go into Alcoholics Anonymous. I went into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I stuck around for a while, and my home called me a yo-yo, a scout, a has-been, a wannabe, and a yet, because I went up, because you were black, you were white, you were pink, you were gay, you were not gray, you wore different clothes, you looked funny to me, and you know the reasons I couldn't stay in Alcoholics Anonymous at that time is because there was nothing but you white people in there. And I don't like white people. If you're a woman, it's all right, but you men, you guys don't live like I did. You know, and so that was one of my excuses. So anyway, make a long story short, is that I ended up with Barbara. And you talk about it. If some of you think she is bad now, you should have met her before she got in here. Well, but we stuck it out, and I started, you know, I started going to meetings, and some old timer would get up and tell me, you know what, Mike, you got to change. And I said, this program doesn't work for me. He says, no, you got to change. So I did. I did one day. I went out and cut my mustache off. I said, you're great. I come back and I said, this thing don't work. I changed. And he said, no, you got to change. So I did. I went and cut my hair and got rid of my bell-bottoms, Levi's. Walked in with a Frisco jeans back in those days and khakis. Because I was hipster-looking cool from the South Side. Because I'd go to any place to look good. And I still went back out. And so one day, somebody told me, you got to change from the inside. And there's where I got that. I heard in these rooms that if you hang with dogs, you're going to get fleas. And it's true, because I got a bunch of fleas. And I always come back and say, oh, you guys can tell me, keep coming back. I ran with that one. Oh, I had a good one with that one. Because I know you guys were going to tell me to keep coming back. I knew you were. Yep, big enough. And those days, where I come from, my home group, you went back out, you raise your hand, and you come up to the up front, and you stand up, and you tell everybody, I went back out again. And I couldn't figure out why. And I did figure out later why you did that, right? So I did that, and I started the reason I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, because for me, I got sick and tired of being sick and tired. I got sick and tired of losing my kids. I got sick and tired of losing my wife. I got sick and tired of going to prison. I got sick and tired of riding a gray goose. I got sick and tired of losing everything. And I got sick and tired of losing my pride, my dignity. When I woke up, my last drink was at this bar where my cabin I had, just one room, a sink, and a bed. That's it. And I walk into this bar that maybe 10 steps, I was sitting in the bar already. I'm sitting, the last time I drank, I was sitting there and minding my own business. I hustled beer. I haven't lost my hustle yet. I picked up a beer and this little brown bottle comes by in front of me. And someone says, you know, for a dollar, he says, I'll let you sniff it. And I said, loan me a dollar. He loaned me a dollar. I gave it back to him and I got to pick it up and went, and I got the instant high that lasted 5 seconds. And anyway, I woke up between the buildings. I had no bathroom, I had to go upstairs to the top of the bar to go to the bathroom. I woke up my own vomit. I woke up, I shit all over myself and peed on myself. And remember, I was always got to look good. And I wasn't looking good or smelling good. So that night, I said, I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. And it started then, but I went back out. See, because I'm a typical little wino Mexican that us people, I don't know what one is. I don't eat one flower seed. I don't eat one tortilla. I didn't have, my wife didn't have one kid. I wasn't in one relationship. Why did I think I could do this one time? I don't recommend this to do it this way. This is my experience of this program. And I kept going back in and out. I didn't stay here once. And then when I came back in, went back out, I ended up going to Monterey. And in Monterey, we had the Fireside Meets, and there was a bunch of old-timers there. And I kept raising my hand every time. I go, my name is Mike. I'm an alcoholic. I had a slip. I had a slip. I went out. She treated me wrong. Oh, my dog pissed on my shoe. This old-timer got up, took his wallet out, and gave me $20. I'm not in the church, and I do respect God and everything, but I came to church, but he says, here, son of a bitch, here's $20. Don't come back because I'm sick of you going in and out. And that guy saved my ass. And that's the first time someone told me exactly what I needed to hear. Because if you would tell me, or might keep coming back, hey, chew you out. Because I don't know those type of languages and pat me in the back. I don't need that shit. And I was treated that way all my life. And then this program says, be who you are. You know, and I finally got it, and I am who I am. I'm not the best guy that you want to be around with. I'm not the best person to share at meetings. But you know, I am who I am. I just don't drink. I just don't drink. And that man saved me, you know. And to make a long story short is that I'm a person that I don't drink no matter if my arms fall off, my legs fall off, I can't see today. Believe it or not, my life is a lot better than what I used to be when I first came in here. And I want to thank you guys for coming out from Hanford and giving me a little support. I thought I'd never get that, but, you know, God's in charge, not me. And with that, I'll keep coming back. Thank you.